about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who's the Most High? Who's the divine authority? It's all about the claim of the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is August 12th, 2025. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 79th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for this show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, X, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome to the Cubbyhole. And as I will continue to let all the first-timers know, I definitely recommend starting at podcast number one, work your way forward in order, so that way you'll have a bigger picture understanding, and also you'll be a lot more prepared once you make it to these more advanced episodes, okay? And as for all the listeners and studiers of the show, welcome back. Thank you for all your time and all your efforts, and we have a pretty big follow-up show today. We're going to continue the techniques of the sacred trace modalities being ritual and mimicking. And so it is just going to be these two, and I'm just going to really try my best to cover these two extensively. And if we have time at the end, we will be getting into the logos just to give everybody a taste of that before we really jump into it on the next episode, because it is a very big deal and it is very important as a prerequisite to understanding the Netcher God Thoth. Okay. So that being said, there are going to be slides for today's show. So if you're not already at cubbyhole.com, please go there and go to the top where it says podcast 51-100. Click on that and then go all the way down to show number 79. And there you will find the slides for today's show. Okay. So I'm going to get into the recap of episode 78. And then I will get into the ritual. And then I will get into the topics for today's show. And so on the last episode, we talked about, I got into a comparative study of retrace and religion, a side-by-side of these two words, because retrace really helps us understand one of the derivations of religion. I got into two derivations. One is the etymology that we've been talking about on this show for a very long time, being religare, which means to bind or to tie back. But the other etymology of religion is relegere. And so relegere means to go over again, to reread. And this is very important when you do a comparative study with this retrace, and also understanding ritual, the power of ritual. And so this can be something that can be very negative, in the sense that if someone is just learning something over and over and over, but just doing it as a form of regurgitation, where they're not really learning anything, they're not really understanding anything, that is a very negative form of relegere. But the positive side of relegere means to go through the ritual to learn the information so it sticks, so you come to a better understanding of that information, because you're actually doing outside work, outside research, bringing it to that word. And again, going over and over and over information will only help it solidify. And I'm going to get into this as we go through this show. The other concept that I got into on the last episode, which was the title for the last episode, which was Left Foot First. And so Left Foot First is all about evolution. So it means to be in the box. So that's why when you look at these Netchers, who are these statues, like I showed in the last episode, I showed you guys the triadic statue of Horus, Osiris, and Set. And they're all together expressing light and dark and balance, but also evolution. Okay. So when we understand this symbol, when we understand what it really represents, think of it in terms of this rigid body that is, you know, laying down. It's not moving. Without the foot going first, without the left foot stepping forward, it is a body that is rigidly stiff, like a dead body. So when you think of a dead body in a casket or in a tomb, it's about understanding that this represents our material, rigid self that is dominating. And now, once that left foot moves forward in the forward direction, this is about stepping out of that box. This is about evolving out of darkness. This is about rejuvenation from death. This is about evolving in a forward direction in consciousness, out of darkness. And so this is a very, very powerful, powerful symbol to understand. And there was a few things that I forgot to mention in the last episode, and I just want to quickly go over these few parts. One was, I really wanted to get into this measurement system. The measurement system that is being implied is, well, for one, it's dealing with feet. So the foot system, or the system that has the foot involved, is the imperial system, okay? And so this is very, very significant when it comes to the solar cult, because a foot is of 12 inches. And so 12 inches corresponds to the 12 houses of the zodiac, which is solar. But it also corresponds to the 12 greater mysteries, which is solar. So it's a solar science. This is something that really has to be understood from a very symbolic level, but also just understanding that these measurement systems, like the imperial measurement system and the cubit, the ancient Egyptian cubit measurement system, these are systems that come from an actual measurement of an actual foot, or an actual distance between body parts. Like, for instance, the ancient Egyptian cubit system actually started from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger. So this became the cubit measurement system. Well, the same thing happened with the imperial system. It actually started from someone's foot. And then, of course, this was divided in 12. So that's why we have 12 inches in a foot. And then, of course, you know, in the modern world that we live in today, we're dealing with a metric system, largely. I mean, we're still dealing with the imperial system, But the biggest system in the world is the metric system. And the metric system is very interesting because it's dealing with the measurement from the North Pole to the equator. And that's very significant. So you have all these different measurement systems, and they're very, very tied in with this ancient Egyptian Necher Thoth, because he is the god of measurement, among other things. But that is a very, very important key component to pay attention to as we move into this science of the Necher Thoth, or Jehudi, or Tot. So that is something that I wanted to make mention of that I forgot to talk about. And also a few other things that I forgot to mention was the origin of the left foot first. Now, I talked about this with the god, the serpent god, being Apep. And Apep is this evil serpent god. And that means that this is a representation of the dominating ego, the controlling ego, the evil part of the self that behaves from a place of ignorance. And so this is a very important component or part of this ritual, dealing with this left foot first, because it's about that step forward over or from the serpent, because it all starts with Apep. Apep is the beginning part of this ritual that deals with this left foot first. And this is also, this is a funerary ritual, because again, this is what I was just talking about with the rigid body that is like the body of one who is stepping out of their sarcophagus or their casket, their box. And so it's about coming out. It's about stepping out of that darkness, to step out of the darkness of Apep, the evil part of the self, the dark ignorance of the self. And that being said, the origin of left foot first deals with what's known as the papyrus of Nesi-Amsu. And this basically means to serve the creator, to serve the great work, to serve the truth, to be ready to serve the truth. Because once you have honestly stepped forward with the left foot symbolically, this represents being ready to take on the great work, to evolve in consciousness. And I also meant to mention the work of Schwaller de Lubitsch. And Schwaller de Lubitsch, if you're not familiar, is a French Egyptologist who made his great work, two really big bodies of work, which is the Temple of Man. And I put a link up to find his work in the last episode. I'll leave a link up in this episode as well. But he gets into this giving and receiving, dealing with the left foot first. So I definitely recommend checking that out. He has some really great work on ancient Egypt and this whole ritual. So, and the other topics that I got into on the last episode was the modality of emulation and the technique of cultivation of a caring attitude. And this is all about understanding that we are largely living in a world of the condition of apathy. And the way that we're going to get out of this condition is to first acknowledge the condition and accept that you and everyone else is part of this condition, but you don't have to stay in this condition as an individual. You don't have to stay in the condition of apathy, but most people are in this condition and they're not aware of it because they don't care to look into it, for one. But how can you really care about looking into it when you're living in a state of apathy? So this is about cultivating a caring attitude once you learn that we are part of a condition of no care. And once you find your care to look at this condition, now you must cultivate a caring attitude and emulating those who have that caring attitude, because it's about not about copying anyone. It's about recognizing a behavior that is aligned to natural law and actually putting that, applying that into the self to become a better version. And that's something that you can learn from multiple people, including archetypes. And so that was a very, very important part of the last episode. So definitely worth re-listening to over and over and over until it really sinks in just how important the emulation of a cultivating caring attitude really is. And so that being said, I got into the other technique, being striving for agape. And so emulating this is so important because it's about recognizing what it really means to do things in this world because they are the right thing to do. So obviously, understanding the difference between right and wrong will be a first priority in striving for agape. But, you know, the moral science is written on our hearts. We know deep down what the difference between right and wrong is. Most people just run from this topic because they don't want the responsibility, even though they are, in fact, responsible for their behavior in this world. And so, as we learn that doing the great work, because it's the right thing to do, it means to not do it for likes or popularity or for making friends or for making people happy. It's just doing what is right because it's the right thing to do, period. Very simple. And so then we got into the technique of moral behavior as an emulation. And that's basically what I've just been talking about. It's just all about emulating those who are morally behaved so that way we can learn from them and incorporate or integrate that into our being, into our lives, so that way we can be more aligned. Because as each person is more aligned to natural law, the more that we're going to have a harmonized evolution in consciousness. And then we got into reflective journaling and how important that is as far as being reflective in the words, in the art, in the ideas that you write on paper has more of an ability to reflect into the mind to help it understand itself a lot clearer, a lot better. And so emulating others who do this is because there's all kinds of different techniques for reflective journaling. And, you know, the more that we really branch out and look into this type of information and incorporate or integrate this type of this technique into our lives, the better and clearer our minds will become as a result. And so then we got into synchronizing, the modality of synchronizing, and then I got into the techniques of word spelling or word casting or spell casting. And this is a very, very important concept when it comes to being conscious of the words that not only you're using, but also the words that are entering into the mind. And the more conscious we are of these words, the more that we will not, you know, the more that we'll have a defensive shield, a spiritual shield against words that not only we can use that can cause disharmony or confusion, but also the words that enter into us that can cause confusion and discordia. And so then we got into the technique of symbolic resonance. And, you know, again, this is something that if you can just wrap your head around the simple definition of what a symbol is, to compare one thing with another, this is where we find the resonance. And so as we look at two different symbols or multiple different symbols and bring enough knowledge to those symbols, the more of a resonance we will have in understanding what we're really looking at. And just remember that everything is symbolic. The whole universe is symbolic. And so the more that we learn in knowledge and also having an understanding of what it is that we are learning, this is what's going to help us have this true resonance. And then that led into writing and notes and drawing. And these are three very, very important aspects of synchronizing, because as you write and as you take notes and as you draw images, the more that you're going to, especially when it comes to the sacred, the more that you're going to be able to trace out the sacred, the more you're going to be able to have, you know, because this is also part of reflective journaling. And so it's going to give you this synchronized resonance of the information that you are putting down on paper that reflects back into you. So you can have, you know, just a more of a clear picture understanding of information, whether that be through writing, through note-taking, or through drawing. And so obviously there's a lot more that I explained about each one of these concepts, but the ones that we're going to get into today is ritual and mimicking. So I'm going to save that for later, but we're also just carrying all this other information, dealing with the cone, the spire, the conspire, the Holy Trinity, creation, profane trace, sacred trace, fetishism, the crescent arch, the logos, Thoth, sign language, pure forms, mythology, eschatology, astrotheology, hero cults, cosmic parents, totemic sociology, animism, rejuvenation, mental material death, spiritual birth, spirit, square, X, zodiac, the inner journey of the soul, darkness, soil, underworld, Amenta, the duat, the tomb, the womb, death, metamorphosis, natural law, religion, mystery traditions, mystery schools, the little bear, the great year cycle, the stellar, lunar, solar, mythos, Osiris, Horus, Set, esoteric Freemasonry, anthropomorphism, preserving, and aphanism, and so much more. So this is the basic recap of the last episode and also all the other episodes dealing with this unraveling science of the zodiac. Okay, so if you're not already there at cubbyhole.com, I am going to the very first slide for today's show, which is the zodiac. And this is just to orient yourself with as I go through this ritual, just so you know where I'm going through. And it just really is something that we should understand very deeply how important this information is as far as a tracing board. This is a very ancient tracing board that we must trace out the science through the myth, through the stories. That's what astrotheology is all about, because it's all about understanding the science of the cosmos. The science of the celestial world is stored in the myth, in the myths, in the stories, as a way to preserve that science. And then what we're supposed to do, the powerful ability to draw from each house, from each symbol, from each word, from each season, from each direction. This is where we're really going to refine ourselves. This is where we're going to really rebuild what has been destroyed as far as our true connection to the ancient Egyptian past, which is a very pure form science, and it really does give us an understanding of the world that we live in today as a result. Because as we learn pure forms, we start to understand the fragmentation of the science of today in the modern world. And so we are still drawing out clarity through the art of tracing. And we are symbolically drawing from the chest of the third degree tracing board of ancient and modern esoteric craft masonry, which is analogous to the bottom half of this zodiac, going from west down to south, up to east, and in that direction. This is the lower dark half, if you will. The top half is the light, the dark half is the bottom, the deep. And so we are in the process of remembering pure forms and reuniting the soul with the spirit of true care in order to cultivate care and rebuild and polish and strengthen the modern pillar of today, which you could look at as the solar pillar or the third degree, being part of this colossal sacred bridge that is barely connected to the ancient sacred pillar of the past, which is, you could say, stellar. So it's missing the lunar crescent arch symbolically. So this is why Thoth, Jehudi, Tot is so important in this area of the ritual. Because this is about understanding the deeper aspect of fetishism. It's about understanding that something is missing, and we must understand what it is so that way we can rebuild or remember. And so the reason that we're having such a difficult time remembering is because we have not only been cut off, but we have neglected, we have abandoned this great science. And the dark sorcerers, the dominators, the dark psychologists of this world, they are thriving on the fact that most people are so detached from their roots and their ancient ancestors, basically their cosmic parents. And these dominators understand the trace. They understand the trace. They're using the trace, but they're using it in a dark way. You know, just think about the fact that there's contact tracers. You know, I mean, that's just a very simple out in the open thing, but obviously it gets a lot deeper and darker into, you know, when you get into the dark occult. But these dark beings, these dark dominators, they draw their power from the ignorance of the people. They draw their power from how far removed people are from their origins, which is their lost connection to the knowledge of the ancient Egyptian mythos. And so this evil behavior is something that no one can really know unless they go out in search for truth. But it is knowable. It is here. There isn't any more nescience. The knowledge is out in the open for everyone to look at. But most people don't seem to really want to look at it. But it's there. And that means that you and everyone else is responsible for that knowledge, for understanding how evil this behavior really is. And so the way that we're going to understand this evil behavior is through understanding the human condition enough. Understanding that we are in a condition of apathy, and then understand that this evil behavior is understood through looking at institutionalized religion and what has come out of that as a form of mind control. Not the tradition, not the teachings, but the institutionalized religion, the special interests behind these religions, these organized religions. But also it's about understanding religare, which means this evil behavior is a result of all different types of religion. In the sense of whatever is holding someone back because of their belief system, which that's what atheism is. It's a belief system. That's what scientism is. It's a belief system. That's what the belief in money is, as something that we should focus on more than anything else, which is the ultimate false god in people's minds, this belief in money. This is a belief system that holds people back. Then there's the belief system in authority, government, the state. This is what's holding people back. And that being said, it's also about not understanding the control structure of the world, which is a compartmentalized pyramidal control structure. Not understanding the pyramid of power, not understanding the centralized control system, because no one understands spirit at the center, at the middle. No one understands that, therefore they're confused in all different directions, not understanding what is at the center, where the dominators of this world are controlling the center. They're keeping you from the center, but also really it's not even just them. It's mostly the people who are willfully choosing to stay away from the center. And so one of the reasons is because people don't understand natural law. Most people do not understand the difference between right and wrong. They don't understand the structure of karma. They don't understand the pillars of enlightenment. And therefore, this is why this evil behavior continues in the world, because no one knows how to measure the difference between right and wrong. But again, the information's out. Everybody's responsible. Because the information is at your fingertips, there is nowhere to hide. It's here now, and you either face it, or it just goes into pure hell, enslavement, and oblivion. And one of the reasons that this is happening is because we're living in a world of materialism. But people don't understand what that really represents. People do not take the time to try to figure out why we are in a state of materialism. And it's so much deeper than people are willing to admit, which is the information of this is stored in the Great Pyramids of Giza in Egypt. These pyramids have the knowledge encrypted into the form and the symbol to help us understand the orientation that we need to be in, which then helps us understand the disorientation that we're in, which has led to materialism and socialism as a result. So we have to learn symbolism. We have to learn sacred geometry, but understand why that's important. We don't just learn, you know, shapes and forms. It's about understanding that there's knowledge that needs to be brought to these symbols and to the sacred geometry in order to unfold the science of the mysteries, to demystify these mysteries. And it's already demystified. People just need to spend more time and pay more attention to the information to really allow themselves to develop an understanding, a big picture, deep understanding. And therefore, if you really want to develop the big picture, the evolution of the mythos is what most people do not understand, because this information has not only been occulted, but it's been forgotten, it's been neglected, it's been obliterated for the most part. But here it is. As much as people don't want to believe hearing that, here it is. The information has been laid out in the cubbyhole, and it's going to continue to be laid out. And I'm going to continue to refine it. Doug and Brandon are going to continue to refine this information until it becomes so crystal clear. Even though, if you're really paying attention, it probably is becoming more crystal clear. But of course, you know, this is a big development. I don't expect people to get this information overnight. It takes minutes, it takes days, it takes weeks, it takes months, it takes years. It takes pure attention and time and dedication and tenacity to want to learn this information, to want to see what it's really saying. You have to truly want to know the truth. And so, that being said, the playbook is nature itself. And these dominators understand that science of the playbook, and they use it. They've been using it for their own gain, with layers of sophistication added to that playbook, to where they understand the mind very well, because they are master psychologists and they understand what is going through most people's minds, because most people do not care about what's going on in their minds because they don't know what's going on in their minds. They've never stepped foot into their internal temple. Most people are too busy doing things that only benefit them and only pleasure them and keep them in a bubble that has nothing to do with anything about true evolution in consciousness It has nothing to do with anything really good in this world. So it's going to take widely overcoming negligence, apathy, and ignorance, which are behaviors that have nearly obliterated the connecting archway back to this ancient sacred pillar. It's mostly all just been abandoned. And this abandonment is the loss of our collective responsibility, largely. So abandonment mustn't be abandoned any longer. Not just as a word, but as a symbol. So we must be responsible for this symbol, this word. And we should never abandon it ever again, and everything sacred that is associated with it ever again. And what this whole Cubbyhole podcast is really all about is restoring this sacred abandoned bridge back to its correct functional form with as much accuracy and responsibility as possible, because it's about understanding that the better and sturdier the connection is to the source, the more clarity and understanding of our true sovereignty, which will help us get out of this condition of ignorance and ultimately slavery. And we're doing this as a correspondence in our minds and in our hearts. And then we're willing it into manifestation. So it's a high level of responsibility that we need to attain in order to do this. So we have to understand that we are living in a condition of apathy. So we have to care enough to learn to face this condition and therefore discover care through caring enough to look at this condition. And then we must, through ritual, cultivate care and understand that this is a reconditioning that we must go through, because our whole life is a condition. There is no escaping condition. There is either apathy for reality and for truth, or there is care for truth. Which one is it going to be? So we have to spend a lot of time, we have to spend a lot of attention, take a lot of notes, organize the notes, organize the information, do really deep research, and contemplate and share the information, express the information, because it's about understanding that as we express what we know, we begin to understand what we know. Therefore, we're learning further of what we know and what we understand, because it's a refinement process. It's about left foot first, evolution. And this also means freedom from man's law. That's what it's all about. To rise out of this control structure, which we're all part of. But it takes you, the individual, to symbolically put that left foot forward, to begin to initiate the process. So it's our divine conscious connection with nature and sovereignty. It's our direct lineage back to the ancient adepts of the past, who were the raised elders, the learned men and women who made major sacrifices to preserve this beautiful light in stone and in the cosmos and in the mythos and in other sacred traditions. They traced pure forms out and pass them on to future generations as an absolute transmission of agape love, the highest form of love. So in order to discover these preserved sciences, we are symbolically journeying through the soul receiver of Amenta as a fellow traveler through the trials of the Duat, or the underworld, as a means of bridging the gap of this sacred bridge, or this sacred trestle, through the hidden realm, through the occult, using the maps of the mystery schools derived from the mist, from the ruins, the runes. So it's about discovering and using the craft, the method, passing through the Duat, the Book of the Dead. And this is where our behavior is measured, and what we know is measured symbolically, like the degrees of the lunar light, which is the phases, the angles of the moon. So this is the principle of Thoth. And we are symbolically sowing knowledge in the black soil of Chem or Kemet, or the southern half of Earth, in this sacred garden, and hopefully reaping more truth and more wisdom as a result. So we are filling the grail by demystifying the occult. So that being said, thank you for going through this ritual and the recap. And I know that a lot of this is something that you've already heard before, but again, that's why it's called a ritual. And I'm going to get into this as I go through the rest of the modalities and the techniques. And I really think that the more that we really start to understand what ritual represents, because it's one of those things that really you can only appreciate once you go through it, once you actually start to see the power of ritual, how it can really help you solidify and connect the dots on knowledge, especially sacred knowledge, that can really help connect you back to the Creator, to really, you know, find clarity in reality. And so the next slide, let's go to the next slide, which is the sacred trace techniques, being emulation, synchronizing, ritual, and mimicking. And so on the last episode, I got into emulation and synchronizing and went through the techniques. And I forgot to mention the rhythmic ritual technique. And I think I associated that the word ritual with the modality of ritual. And so I'm going to go ahead and cover rhythmic ritual. It's very important to understand this technique of synchronizing, and it does help us understand ritual a lot better too. So when we're talking about rhythmic ritual, what this is about is syncing up with something much deeper when it comes to the sacred, especially through movements, through sounds, through words, through gestures. But it's not just about syncing up with these particular things. It's about connection. It's about connecting with other people who are on the same frequency, who are on the same wavelength, who are living in a real, genuine, honest way, who are living on the middle path, the center path. And these are people who also want the truth. And obviously, this kind of connection can be really, really beneficial. It can be very powerful, very helpful. And that is because when people are actually on the center path, aligned to the sacred, it is because they want freedom for all. They want freedom for themselves. They want freedom for you. They want freedom for all. And so this is why it's helpful. This is why it's a very beautiful thing of true harmony in nature when people can actually be aligned to the sacred, when they actually willfully bring themselves in tune with the sacred. And so this is also why we can look at other different traditional sacred dances where people are, you know, doing these different gestures, these different chantings, and they're all aligned. They're all synchronized with each other while they do this ritualistic dance for the sacred or with the sacred. And when they're doing this, whether they're necessarily conscious or not, this is about understanding that the dance teaches us that when we are in harmony with each other, no one's rights, no one's freedom is infringed as a result. Because when everybody is in the dance together, when everybody is harmonized together, there isn't any infringement on anyone's rights. So this is what the dance teaches us about the center path, about being on the center path, about being in alignment to truth, about being in alignment to the sacred. And so when we think of our body and our voice and the sounds that we can make and the words that we can produce, we have to look at our being, our whole body, as an instrument that is willfully acted out through the ritual. And what this does in the dance, but also just in everyday life, whether you're with people or not with people, it's about understanding that as you, the individual, are aligning authentically with your body, your gesture, your actions in the world or in the dance, or your behavior through your voice, the words that you choose, and being conscious of those words that you choose, where the breath and the motion of the voice is basically matching up with something much bigger than the self, something you can feel but you can't really see, where the ego, the dominating ego, begins to diminish, where it fades away, where it's no longer in charge. Because this is where someone is realizing that this life is not just about me. It's not just about me. It's about something much bigger. It's about feeding the awareness of the self into the greater shared energy self, the greater awareness, which is where the true evolution of man really is. And this is what helps us understand just how connected we really are to each other. And so, you know, whether you're alone or with others, this kind of rhythm can help you remember something very deep about yourself, because it's a way to come back into alignment, and not just with, you know, the moment in time, but also with something timeless, something that can't be measured, because it's a deep rhythm that we have the ability to align with, that runs through everything in the whole universe. And that's why it's animistic. It's very animated. It's very connected. It's very alive. Now, something else that I wanted to mention about this rhythmic ritual that I find to be very fascinating is a rhythmic drum beat, a very deep rhythmic drum beat, a very bassy beat, is very low. It's very deep. And, you know, think about those words, low and deep. And going through the ritual of the underworld and synchronized with this ritual because it's low in the earth. It's deep in the water or in the womb. And so if we pay attention to many of the different ancient tribal sounds that have been passed down into today's modern world, we can hear the deep sounds. We can still hear the deep sounds in their drums while they do their dance rituals that are dealing with death and rebirth. And some of these dances people might be familiar with, maybe not, but the indigenous North American sun dance, where the people get together and they celebrate renewal. They celebrate the connection to the cosmos. They celebrate expressing rebirth of the individual, but also they express rebirth with their community and really the whole world. And also there's the fire dance of New Guinea, where they're basically doing a night dance that honors the dead. And the dancers, when they leap through the fire, this symbolizes renewal. It's about remembrance. Now, just think about the crossbones with the skull at the center on the fifth point, and how that is also corresponding to the symbol of the two logs with the fire at the center. Because this is really what this whole ritual is about. It comes from the X, because it's all about understanding the sacred is found at the center, and the center is the spirit. This is the timeless part. So jumping through that fire to honor the dead is about going from the end to the beginning. It's about going from death to rebirth or rejuvenation. So this rhythmic ritual of these dances is something that we have learned over thousands, hundreds of thousands of years of being inspired by the sun and by the moon and by the stars. And then we reenact, we synchronize with these cosmic bodies through these rituals in order to remember the information. So that being said, let's go down to ritual. And this is a very, very important modality, and the techniques are so valuable. The techniques of emulation and synchronizing are also very, very valuable, but when you really get into ritual and mimicking, these are modalities of the sacred trace that really, really help us find our way back to our origins. So ritual is about, we have to remember, it's about tracing in time, to trace in time through repetition. So that's what we're going to start with. And repetition regarding the sacred trace is so powerful because it's spiral-like in the way that it's utilized. And each wave or cycle of the spiral, it deepens and sharpens the understanding of the thing that the ritual is being performed for. So an example is reading and researching many different religions and mystery traditions every day in order to, you know, get closer to understanding or having a clearer understanding of the underlying message within all of these traditions, to get to the heart, to get to the center, to get closer to the cup at the center of the round table or the bullseye. And when you really think about this, you know, just don't you think that someone who is ritualistically researching tons and tons of information regarding all different types of religions and traditions and anything sacred, and just becoming very eclectic in the way that they do their research, don't you think that someone like this, who is so dedicated, who is so tenacious in the way that they strive for the ultimate truth, don't you think that someone like this will come to a clearer understanding of what it is that they're trying to find? Don't you think that someone like this really is arriving closer to the truth as a result? This is exactly the reason for the word spiritual, which is spire ritual, because it's about spiraling to a point of clarity through the ritual, which is the repetitive behavior to learn the sacred. And it's repetitive. The wave is repetitive. It's a repetitive pattern that gets closer and closer to the center, to the pole, the center pole of the cone, going to the spire. That's why the spiral goes from the outside in to a point, if you think of it in terms of a cone. So each wave reveals more clarity because it's allowing the self to be closer and closer into that middle path, into that center, into the bullseye. And for this reason, in ritual, repetition doesn't magically wear out the meaning in things. It actually deepens them. It refines them. And so this is why we learn from the Logos, because it sharpens. It's transformative. It's all about understanding the left foot first, because it's the action of hard dedication to truth, to the great work, to repeat important things until they actually stick, until they are remembered. That's what repetition actually does. Repetition allows something to sink or to stick until they're remembered. So this means that the initiate walks the same path repeatedly until they become sharp. And that same path is about staying accurate. It's all about accuracy. It's all about the alignment to the center. So this leads me to reread over and over again. And this is a very powerful technique that I think a lot of people do understand, but maybe they're not conscious of just how powerful it really is. And so this you know, to reread over and over. This is a ritual. Reading the same thing over and over is the same principle. That's why it is a technique of ritual. You know, reading the same thing over and over is symbolically this spiral that I'm talking about. You know, strengthening the mind to a point of clarity. Reading something over and over solidifies the understanding of what's being read. It causes a clearer memory of what is being read. It refines the memory. It causes understanding, or it allows for the development of understanding. And it is one of the most valuable rituals that anyone could ever partake in. And it's also really important to understand when reading or rereading the sacred or anything dealing with the sacred, it's not something that is just going to be revealed automatically. It is something that is revealed in the rhythm of the spire or of the spiral in time. You can't just arrive at the truth. It's a spiraling unfoldment that happens over time. And each reading reveals new layers, new waves as your consciousness evolves. The more that one rereads, the more that there will be new layers of consciousness. And that's really the definition of the spiral staircase. Because going up the spiral staircase, going around that pole in the center and bending around that pole, every time you bend around the pole, a new step emerges. This is a new layer. This is a new wave. This allows you to be sharper because every time you take a new step up, you are rising, you're raising in consciousness. And so rereading is really like mimicking as well, because it's a way of returning to origins and activating memory and being transformative in the way that when you are rereading something very holy and very sacred, it takes you back. It brings you back. It brings you back to the center. It brings you back to the starting point. So it reactivates the self. It reactualizes the self. By putting the self through the rereading, it's like putting the self through mimicry, to mimic the words, to mimic the sounds. And so, you know, I reread things all the time in order to find clarity, in order to really solidify my understanding of what it is that I'm reading. And it's not just rereading that gets me to an understanding. I'm also using my dictionary. I'm also using different references, different authors, different books, where I'm bringing that knowledge to the information that I am rereading over and over and over. So that way it really sticks. It really solidifies. And also, you know, just reading out loud. This is also something that really helps me out, is when I read out loud, not only am I reading the text, but now my ears are hearing the words. The ears are hearing the information, which also helps the heart, because the heart is also using the ears. And so when you're listening with your heart, it's because you're listening to the sacred. And so reading out loud is a very helpful way to understand information that you're rereading over and over and over. But just in general, it doesn't have to be reread over and over and over. But that being said, when you're reading to children over and over, this is also very helpful because children are like little sponges. They soak in the information, and reading them very important information at a very early age, words that, you know, they can pronounce and words that they can put together, words that can help them come to, you know, question and understand reality. This is so critical, especially in the world that we live in today, where most children seem to be more intelligent than most 50-year-olds in this world, which is extremely sad. But the point is that children are not only little sponges that take in a lot of information in their early years, but also they will say the same word over and over and over until it sticks. That's how they learn. And so they also will mimic. You know, this is the rudimentary way of mimicking. They will mimic the way that their parents are or their other siblings. They will mimic and try to emulate what they're hearing. And so this is also part of understanding that ever since we were little children, we have been trying to learn the world through these modalities. We mimic our parents. We emulate our parents, our family, our friends. We synchronize with those that we love, that we care about. And we also do rituals every day that we don't even realize are rituals. Just putting on your clothes every morning is a ritual. Brushing your teeth in the morning or at night is a ritual. So we're part of these rituals. And the way that we learn, you know, reading a book, reading just a paragraph in a book every day can be a ritual. And so the point is that when we understand that rereading is so valuable, when we actually put ourselves through this ritual of rereading information. Now, some people, I know people who can read something and remember exactly what they just read, and they have no problem. They never have to read again. And that's pretty incredible. I'm definitely not one of those people, and that's okay. But the point is, some people have that skill. Some people have that ability, but those who don't can do this technique of rereading to themselves and then to help others, like their children or friends or family, parents. You know, this is something we have to teach each other, is how valuable this technique really is in the way that we understand the world. So, that being said, we're going to go to the rite of alignment. So, the rite of alignment is dealing with mind, body, and spirit. And we have to understand that as a collective species, and especially here in the United States, we have mostly been perpetually and methodically integrated into some seriously dangerous and chaotic rituals, whether that be horrible eating rituals, you know, eating the same trashy fast foods every day, or going to the gas station and eating these awful gas station foods at the same time every day. You know, the pharmaceutical rituals, which is taking the same prescribed pills that really do nothing to, you know, really get to the cause of the illness or the problem. There's the street drugs rituals where people are just taking these awful drugs that they really don't understand, that are, you know, especially these hard drugs that are just devastating people's lives because they're so addicted to them, just like the pharmaceuticals. But they're addicted to them, and they're taking them every single day at the same time. And it's just, it's really just an awful thing that, you know, a lot of people don't know about, but it is really a much bigger problem than what people realize. And also TV rituals where people just come home from their 9-to-5 ritual of working and coming home and watching TV at the same time, these mindless programs that people allow themselves to be put through, where they're just like sponges taking in a whole bunch of, you know, garbage entertainment and news, and they are just absolutely being annihilated by putting themselves through this ritual. But this also ties in with movie and video game rituals where people are just watching a movie every day at the same time, playing video games at the same time every day, porn rituals, people doing this multiple times a day, every day. And it's absolutely destroying people's connection internally. And it is just a really awful, awful mind, emotional drug that people allow themselves to partake in repetitively to completely drain themselves from any real connection. And so it's just a really awful thing that, you know, people allow themselves to be part of in that way. And, you know, this is why so many people are not truly connected. This is why so many people have trouble in their relationships, is because they partake in this type of ritual. And then there's the religious rituals. You know, these religious types that go to these sacred temples. And I have nothing against the sacred temples or going to sacred temples. It's more of just understanding that people are going to these temples once a week, or maybe twice a week, but typically once a week, Saturday, Sunday. And they're going there with no understanding of why they're going there. They don't question why they do this. They don't question what they're really part of. They just have faith that it's all good, and that if they show up, that they're good people. So this is a very dangerous ritual when you really understand how it can play out politically, and how it can play out, you know, with man as the authority, man as the lawmaker. And so, you know, that leads to the political rituals, you know, this really just disturbing ritual that everybody allows themselves to be put through, where they are just living out this illusion that every 4 years they're going to have a chance to get their favorite or their hero to rule over everyone else, including themselves. And this is something where a new master is rotated every 4 years, and they don't understand that they're being ruled, that they are mindless in the way that they believe in this political drama, where they're just so invested into all the different branches of government, and, you know, and thinking that voting is their way of caring. And so they have this ritual of voting every 4 years to show that they're good people and that they really care about the world, and you know, thinking that this is all it takes, because you know, their freedom is on the line. And so that's why it's a me, 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 my freedom mentality. It's a very small way of thinking. It's really not thinking. It's just believing that this is all you have to do in order to be a good person in this world, is choose the side that is right when really both sides are wrong, because both sides are based in government. And therefore, it's a satanic ritual of government. That's really what people are partaking in, and they don't realize it because they don't do any thinking. They don't care to do any thinking or critical thinking or any real research. So, you know, even people that listen to this probably have, you know, this political mindset and still think that there is a true political solution. And I'm telling you, until you really do deep, deep research and really question everything about your belief system, you're probably more than likely still in the political mind control. And every one of us, most people in this world, I would say, have been under this type of mind control. And so, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves and really look at what we really believe in and get out of these little thoughts that we have where, you know, you just want to see your views that you think are righteous be pushed onto those who are on the other political side. And, you know, they're doing the same thing. And so it's a dog eat dog, a very low frequency form of thought. And, you know, I don't want to get, you know, too far into this, but the point is that people are partaking in this type of ritual all the time. And they don't realize it's a mind control ritual. It's basically to create this division outwardly, because people don't want to do internal healing to heal the division within. To heal the division within is to sew up that division into one. To realize that we've been completely blown apart and, you know, spiritually and mentally, now we have to find a way to bring ourselves back together. And that's really what the whole ritual of Osiris is all about. And so one of the biggest rituals that people partake in is the monetary ritual. And the monetary ritual is, I mean, people really believe that, you know, going out and getting money every single day is the absolute highest value of life. And so they do this every single day, every work day, they do this 9 to 5. Most people who have this mindset are 9 to 5 types. So basically, the list goes on and on about all these different profane rituals that people are partaking in. So these rituals are really disorientation rituals. They are rituals where people have no direction. So they are performing directionless rituals every single day. They don't have a center. They don't have a real foundation. So their minds and their lives are just taken all different directions all the time. And so this means that most people have been inverted from nature, because there's no real orientation. And the human condition is also in a state of disintegration, which means being dismembered, because it's about being disintegrated. That's what disintegration is. It's being disintegrated internally. The condition, the human condition, is largely not integrated. It means that most people are not together internally, And therefore, that's why they project this wall against each other externally. That's why people are so divided externally, because they're not integrated. They're disintegrated. They're dismembered. They're disoriented. And so because of this, it means that the body has forgotten that it is a temple. It's a sacred temple. And the mind has basically just been hijacked by sorcerers, by dark psychologists to, you know, fulfill certain agendas that they want to push in this world of their control system. So the mind has just went into a complete psychosis with no idea of true meaning of reality. People are just mostly apathetic and brain dead to what is really going on. Their ideas, their thoughts, their decisions are not really theirs. Even though they are responsible for what they do, they do not understand the mind. They don't understand psychology. They don't understand the world that they live in. And they don't understand that people who have special interests are completely running most of their life through the mind. And so, and then that being said, the spirit, where's the spirit? So we just talked about the body and the mind. What about the spirit? The spirit is just buried in the rubble of numbness of people that fills the hearts and the minds of most people. So the rite of alignment is to remember who you truly are and why you are truly here. It's about stepping into the here and the now, and doing this over and over every day until it clicks, until it sticks. So it requires breaking out of the vicious ritual or cycles that someone has been raised into. Most people have been raised into this. So it's about tracing meaning and the depth of balance, exoterically and esoterically. And this means, you know, hitting the right books, getting a hold of the right books, really doing deep research and paying attention to who the right authors are, who have the best answers, you know, the best solutions to the problems of this world. Those who really deeply care, who have a very well-rounded body of work, who really care about the condition of this world, the condition of the human species in particular. So it means being honest in order to reset in nature correctly, and being tenacious and being moral, and therefore learning the science of natural law, because natural law is an absolute part of reverting back to nature properly. And another part to add into that is reorientation of the direction in the world, because we've been disoriented and we've been directionless. And the way back to source is reorienting and going in the right direction. So it's an alignment process ritual that we individually need to discover and integrate into our lives if we wish to see any type of real freedom in this world. And so if we pay attention to the earth in correspondence to the brain and understand darkness to light and gravity and dirt and sky and high and up and light, this is what's going to really help us understand our true alignment in this world. And so as we align, this is about alignment to the sacred, the rite of alignment. to ritualize this is to align every single day mentally, spiritually to the earth correctly, to the cosmos correctly. Because it's not just about alignment to the earth. It's about alignment to the sun. It's about alignment to the moon. It's about alignment to the stars and the planets consciously. Because as you do it consciously, now you start to feel the real relation, the real connection. And I'm going to get a lot further into that science as I progress through these shows, but we have a lot to put on the table before we get there. Now, the next technique that I would like to cover here is the opening of the vessel. And this is particularly about prepping for a presentation regarding the sacred. And so this is very near and dear to me personally, because this is really where I began to develop, is through presentation and the prep, because this is really what allows us to go from darkness and ignorance and egressing from the darkness to the act of vocalizing, spreading the cement of the sacred. It's about going from not knowing anything of the sacred to knowing something very, very important about the sacred, and then putting that out for others to hear, whether that be through book form or through, you know, building pyramids or statues or through presentations. There are many different expressions for how to present. And so opening the vessel just means opening the self to be able to receive information, hold that information, process that information, and then transmit that sacred information out to others. However you're going to do that. And this means letting go of the ego, letting go of the fear that is holding you back from your expression of the sacred, and to speak with courage in spite of fear. That is really where we begin to become confident. So we have to take that first step, that left foot first, because we're talking about the sacred. And so this means aligning speech and gesture with what actually matters. But the whole prep work leading up to and during the presentation is a refinement process of what someone knows and what they understand. So prepping for a presentation that actually matters, and this means anything to do with the evolution of the species. And, you know, this is all about going through the motions over and over and over. And until it really solidifies, until it really sticks to where you're confident enough to present. And the more that you go through the presentation over and over, the better the delivery will be when you are finally ready to do it. So I am really talking about an actual presentation of slides or getting up in front of people and, you know, speaking into a mic. And, you know, so I just want to make that clear. But we have to remember that a presentation is it's a demonstration of the trivium process. It's a whole way of a continued refinement of yourself. So as you put yourself through a presentation, the information you're presenting will be even more understood by the time the presentation has been given. So once you're done you have so much more confidence in what you understand. So this causes a lot of growth, especially if truth is what someone is seeking and presenting. Being honest with what you know. So the order of this would be to fill up the vessel with lots of knowledge and then contemplating on that knowledge, question that knowledge, and doing a lot of thorough research, supportive research, and then coming to an epistemological understanding of that knowledge, to know how you know what you know, and then realizing whether it is worthy of being presented because you've arrived at a good enough understanding of the information in order to present. And then after that, begin the process of structuring the presentation, going through the whole process of getting everything in alignment, having a good beginning and a middle and an end in the way that the structure is of the information. And the way that it is presented can be on a chalkboard, it can be on a dry erase board, it can be given through computer hardware or software like PowerPoint or Keynote, where you can build slides and have notes and structure, or it can just be given with loud vocals in front of people, just having nothing but just maybe a piece of paper that you're reading from just to keep yourself on track. Or it can be with a mic and a PA system. You can also have a projector. There's so many different ways to express the information. And I think it's really important to try all these different types of presenting just so you have a more well-rounded understanding and you can see what works best for you. And also you can see how many more people you can reach if that's really what you want to do. And I would say, in today's world, the sad thing is, with this type of information that I've been presenting in this show, I would say I'm probably not even reaching as many people as when I just go to a local venue and present in front of a whole bunch of people. But obviously, what I'm doing here is I am preserving information that takes less energy because I recognize how valuable it is. And obviously, it's something that can be preserved, it can be saved in file form, and it can even be printed if someone needs to transcribe the words into text and make it into a book form or, some kind of textual form. But the point is that it's just really important to try all these different ways of expressing the sacred in presentation form. And also, going through this process as a ritual over and over and over again, this is what's going to not only strengthen your skill sets, but also your courage. And it definitely will deepen your understanding of what you already know. So it truly does reveal new evolved layers of consciousness. It really is the spiral, the cone spiral, the cone spire in the way that we develop to a higher point, to a sharper point, to a sharper understanding, to a sharper delivery. And so that is really, really valuable information as a technique because it really does develop someone spiritually if truth and the sacred is what someone truly seeks and what they truly align to. So now we're going to go to mimicking. And mimicking, there is a lot to talk about. And there's no way that I can cover everything about mimicking because it is such an ancient technique, but I just want to cover four really important techniques that I find to be so valuable in helping someone really truly connect back into nature correctly, properly. So the first technique, just remember, mimicking traces the form in things. So it's about tracing the form, the gesture, the dance. And the first technique is embodying or acting out the archetype. And just so we're on the same page, an archetype, we have to remember, is an original form. So it's about tracing out the pure form in things by acting it out. Acting out the pure form. And this also means it's a primordial pattern in nature as a result. And so embodying or acting out an archetype is about participating in a form larger than the personal self. So this is what I was talking about with rhythmic ritual, because it's about understanding that it's not just about the individual. It's about the whole. It's about the collective as well. It's about becoming the symbol itself. And I also covered this in the last episodes that sign language is the gesture. It's the dance, which is acted out. Which means by acting or dancing, this means that someone becomes that sign or that symbol or that archetype. Not literally, but spiritually, because it's about understanding that we are not copying when it comes to the sacred. It is all about taking the pureness, the universal pureness, and integrating that into ourselves to become more clear on reality, to become more connected. Because it's about remembering, and simultaneously, while remembering, you know, having the experience of the dance itself. And the dance does not have to be this body physical dance. We have to remember that it's about putting the self through a ritual of repetition to do the dance of alignment to natural law or the alignment to truth. That's really what the dance helps us remember. Because it's about synchronizing. It's the rhythmic ritual. And it's about dancing out the myths or acting out the myths and simultaneously creating your own hero story, which is really just a story about facing your fears and overcoming your fears. Or you could say, facing the truth and not letting the ego dominate the self any further. The material dominator dominating the self any further. That's really what a hero or a spiritual warrior is all about. It's about embodying the shadow, which means facing the hidden traumas or the repressed parts of the self. So acting out the archetype is about what I've been talking about with Osiris, because it's about being in alignment with nature, because Osiris represents nature. Osiris represents the sun. Osiris represents the moon, Osiris represents the seasons. Osiris represents all these different nature forces, these netchers, because he is, you know, in the solar cult, he is the ultimate netcher. He is the focal point netcher. So this means he is a force in nature that if we align ourselves, embody or act out these forces in nature, then we are learning these forces in nature. And then there is the imitating the exemplar for truth. And so in this case, it's not just about mimicking a thing like the sun or, you know, any totem animals. It's more about mimicking a person or someone who embodies truth itself. And this can be someone who is very wise, someone who really is aligned to truth, like a sage, like a guru, like a prophet, like a very advanced teacher. But it can also be a divine cosmic being or terrestrial being. So an exemplar is it's a living moral example. Someone who talks the talk and someone who really truly walks the walk. Someone who lives a very honest life and speaks truth and speaks wisdom. Someone who has compassion. Someone who wants justice against the dark evil of the world. Someone who is in alignment with the sacred. But these types of people are not just models of correct behavior. They are living embodiments of a sacred principle. And just to share with you guys some of the really amazing human exemplars that I really do deeply try to push myself to be more like. I've named off these names before, but I will continue to talk about these great men who have really laid out some incredible knowledge that has really uplifted my spirit and has really inspired me to go a lot further into what I would like to become in this world. And that is obviously Albert Churchward, Gerald Massey, and Manly Palmer Hall. These three men in particular. Now, obviously, there's a lot of other exemplars, and these three are really the ones that have really stood out to me the most, who have really just inspired me to develop myself and become something better. And so I strive to be more like these men. I imitate these men in certain ways in order to really analyze their understanding and their decisions and their view and their behavior. I really try to understand. That's really what it's about. It's not about copying them. It's not about trying to become them. It's about understanding that what they carry as a very high example of how to be in the world, that is what I strive to mimic. That is what I strive to emulate. That is what I strive to synchronize with. And also, I don't just depend on these great examples. I also mimic or emulate or synchronize with some of the divine archetypal exemplars. These exemplars that I'm going to name off are just a few that have really inspired me And when it comes to Hiram Abiff, I find Hiram Abiff to be one of the greatest archetypal exemplars who has really opened up such amazing doors to the ancient world as a symbol. Same with Horus. Horus is such an enormous hero, Netcher. Someone who we can look to understand not only the sun, but also the moon and the stars. Someone who gives us hope to be born within us. And that's the same principle as Jesus. Jesus is also a great exemplar. If we really are staying true to what Jesus represents. If you want to look at Jesus as a real person, fine. If you're inspired by that, fine. But as an archetype, as a symbol, I look at Jesus as a very, very powerful hero to understand. Because Jesus can help us understand our problem with the solar cult by literalizing and euhemerizing the myth. So we can look at Jesus as a contingency because we have literalized this information. And also, I'm very inspired by Thoth. But, you know, these are just a few of the exemplars, the archetypal, the divine archetypal exemplars, if you will, that have really inspired me quite a bit. And also, you know, also just to take it a step further, when you really strip down these archetypes, you really realize that, I mean, I really personally realize that it's not really these archetypes that I am inspired by. It's really elements of nature, forces of nature, cosmic bodies like the sun, like the moon, like the stars, like the planets, like the forces of gravity, Earth. These are things that I'm inspired by, truly. But I love the fact that human beings have been so intelligent that they have created these amazing archetypes to help pass forward the knowledge of this information of nature, of the cosmos, because it means that they truly cared. But obviously, when you don't take care of that information, look what happens. We go into a world of materialism and socialism and literalism, and it's a true hellish world. And the way back is to learn how to ritualize care, how to mimic again, the sacred art of mimicking. People are so afraid of this because they think it's copying something. No, it's not. When it comes to the sacred, mimicking has nothing to do with copying. It has nothing to do with making fun of anything. It has everything to do with integration into nature correctly, in a correct way. Because it's about reconnection. It's about rememberment. So now we're going to go to embodying totems. And this is about dancing as a form of imitation of totem animals or other elemental forces through movements, through behavior, and also through essence. So it's a transformation dance. It's a transfer dance as well, which is really a transfer of cosmic and terrestrial knowledge in the form of a dance, in the form of a gesture, in the form of a sign or a symbol. It's a ritual of acting out the animal behaviors, the animal characteristics, and other elemental forces as a means of preserving knowledge, dealing with nature and the cycles of nature, and doing this over and over and over as a means of remembering and passing on or transferring the sciences onto future generations. So that way, people of the future, aka us, has the ability to trace this information out, to remember who we are, to remember what we're here to do. So it's about making the sciences traceable. That's why it's sacred. So acting out the totems is about becoming the stacks, the layers of consciousness, becoming conscious of this, and understanding that it's about consciousness being associated with the self that corresponds to the animals. And so this technique of embodiment of totems is really, really important to understand of the language of nature. Humans really are totemic in regards to consciousness. And this is something that we can learn by studying the ancient Egyptian mythos, the stellar, the lunar, and the solar. So we learn ourselves by becoming aware of the animal kingdom and the cosmic kingdom, and of course the terrestrial kingdom, just the whole sacred kingdom in general. And now I want to read something, a little excerpt from The Origin and Evolution of Primitive Man by Albert Churchward. I'm going to read a page out of that book. He says, when approaching these people, take a green branch of a bush or green leaves, and holding them in the right hand, raise it above your head as if to heaven. Or if you cannot get any bush or green thing, raise your hand with palm towards heaven. Amongst the Nilotic tribes who have the hero cult, raise your right arm with closed hand, except index finger, which should point to the celestial north or to Sothos, and then bring it with a wide sweep and point downwards. The indication is that the spirit goes down into the west, like Amenta, to the underworld through the Duat, travels through this and comes up again as a white spirit in Sothos in the east, and then travels to the celestial north. And I'm going to keep reading this, but I just want to make mention of something here, because Amenta in the west is like Sothos in the upper east. So egressing out of darkness into Sothos. So also just, you know, keep in mind the zodiac when I'm going through this ritual that Albert Churchward is providing here, okay? And also just keep in mind the third degree tracing board with the acacia leaves in the north and in the west, okay? Because that's what it's hinting to. That's what it's talking about, okay? So we have to understand this is part of understanding the third degree, because that's what it's about. Okay, so I'm going to read the rest of this. So Some give this sign pointing to the west. Sweep down and around, and then bring the arm and finger up, pointing to the north. This, with crossing the arms on the breast, which is at the center, the X, which will carry you through all the tribes in North and South America and all others that I know of. If you know the sacred totem, that is the mother totem, from which the tribes descended, and show this as well after the above signs, you may ask for anything and nothing will be refused to you. And so this is a ritual of sign language. It's a totemic sign language which suggests all the directions, north, west, south, and east, and back to north. And so this really does kind of create like a water drop in a sense. But the point is that it's about understanding that the spirit comes down and descends and waits for a human being to pick that spirit up, that care, and come up to Sothos in the light, in the material, back into material, where the spirit and material are realized as one and the same. So this is exactly what I've been talking about with earth brain science. It's the same thing. It's the same science. And understanding that it is mother, the garden, understanding that we're in the sacred garden. This whole ritual is dealing with the sacred garden. And it's about understanding this zodiac and realizing that the poles, the North Pole, dealing with the little bear, going all the way down to the deepest, darkest parts of mother, the womb, the tomb, and understanding this is totemic because it's about low to high or high to low, back to high. It's about coming from a point and going out to a circle and back to a point. And so this is a very powerful ritual to understand and to study because it really does help us understand sign language and gesture and understand direction up being associated with north, with true north. And this is all dealing with the cone that I'm talking about, with the pole at the center and the spiral going all the way up to the point, to the spire. And this also deals with the next technique, which is acting out the cosmic cycles. So in many traditional cultures, mimicry is not imitation in the casual sense. It's a ritualized reenactment of original sacred powers and events in nature. It's how humans align themselves with the divine or the cosmic order. So this is not only our communication with the cosmic bodies, but it's also our cosmic classroom. It is our university on how to live in accordance with nature. That's really what it's about. So acting out cosmic cycles is first about learning the science of the cosmic bodies and how they affect Earth and all its life. So this means becoming conscious of the sciences of the lunar, the solar, and the stellar, and even the planetary bodies in order to not only connect with them, but to learn from them. That is why it's a form of mimicry. And really, all of these modalities of the sacred trace. But I think a fair question that we can ask ourselves is, how is this science relatable to us? How do we truly relate to this science? How is this science something that we really care about? And then also, how is this science even aggregated over time? You know, how would we ever aggregate all this science into one place? And so this is where myth comes in. This is where archetypes, legends come in, because it's the mythological stories, it's the archetypes that preserve these sciences. And these stories are very relatable in a very deep, primordial way. And they're relatable because they're going through cycles as well. And so we learn from each other, especially humans learning from the cosmos or the cosmic bodies or from nature in general. And as humans learn the art of mimicking, what happens is it creates a lasting bond. It creates a lasting relation with what they mimic. It leaves an imprint on the soul, because mimicking causes an understanding, a very close understanding of the cycles, which is how it reveals the relatable story. Because mimicking creates clarity of what is being mimicked. It creates a closeness. It creates a sacred funnel of divine information in this case. The cosmic bodies and their cycles are ancient preservers of surviving and experiencing the life of the universe and all its functions. Now, one of the most notable mimicries that reveals this acting out of the cosmic cycles is the one that I've been, you know, really hammering on regarding the ritual of Osiris. And this ritual is preserved in the ancient Egyptian solar myth. So it preserves the science of the journey of the sun through all the days and all the seasons and the years. And so this journey of the sun, it teaches us in this technique of acting out the cosmic cycles, it teaches us our human journey of the soul, and also when to plant and when to harvest, and also, you know, so much more, a lot more. And so it is an off-world teacher of light. It teaches us literal light and spiritual light. That's also the point of the moon as well. That's why Osiris is associated with the moon, because it teaches us the difference between literalism and allegory. It teaches us the difference between dark and light. And so, going through this ritual of this solar science mythos, being the ritual of Osiris, this is really all about tracing it out and becoming conscious of it and how important it is. And therefore, it is a form of mimicry, a very sacred bond that we must remember. And so this goes hand in hand with what I was talking about earlier with the right of alignment and reorienting correctly in nature. That's what these myths help us remember. And we must remember, and we must preserve, and we must rise out of this darkness that we find ourselves in. So I'm just going to go ahead and go quickly through this next slide just to give everybody a taste of what's to come in the next episode. We're going to talk about the logos in the next episode. So this slide is tracing out the logos to consciously engage with the divine signature in all things. That's what the trace is. Geometry, nature, myth, sound, and language. Not merely to observe it, but to walk it. You know, repetitively, to walk it, to mimic it, to sync up with it, and ultimately to emulate the logos. Because to trace the logos is to remember thyself. And that is what it is all about. Because we have to remember the logos is something sacred in nature. It's dealing with the sacred trace. It is a way for us to realign ourselves correctly in nature. And this whole idea of the logos goes so much further back than what people realize. And that is why it is tied to Thoth, who goes all the way back. I mean, we're talking about universal natures. We're talking about forces in nature, ways to develop spiritually by understanding nature. And so I'm going to get very deeply into this concept. And so I really hope that people tune in to the next episode and also, you know, just keep on listening to all the other developing episodes to really see where this is all going. And I promise you, it is a really incredible development that will only benefit your understanding of the world that you live in and who you really are and why you're really here. That's all this information is here to help people do on their journey. It's not about being right. It's not about, presenting this information because I think I'm smart. If I did that, I just wouldn't be talking about this type of information. I wouldn't care about this type of information. This type of information is all about spiritual development. It's all about connecting with source. It's all about understanding truly the world and the universe that you live in, that you exist in, that you are conscious in, or that you can become conscious in. So this is a very powerful, powerful science to understand, to develop. And so, that being said, I really thank you all for tuning in and listening to these shows. And if you're interested in more episodes or presentations or news, please go to cubbyhole.com. And also to those who understand that we are being greatly affected by the nonsense censorship of the world, I really encourage anybody who finds value in this work to please share this information as far and as wide as you can, or at least preserve it, at least study it, at least question it, at least, you know, take it further than what you're hearing here. And also, if you are wanting to make sure that you don't lose this information, if the, you know, Wi-Fi goes out or the power goes out, if you go to cubbyhole.com, go to the player of each show, and underneath the player, you will find a download button. And if you click that, it will take you to a new window where you can hit the three little dots, click on that, and there you will find a way to download each episode. So that way you'll have all of them aggregated in one area and you can do whatever you want with them. Hopefully something good and beneficial, but it is there to be, you know, freely shared and freely downloaded, you know, whenever you want. So that being said, I'm going to go ahead and jump off here. I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening, and keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.